a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you. Folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios. Cold outside. You need to be bundled up. You need to scrape off that windshield. You need the apparel, the attire. You need the tools, the instruments to maybe take care of your vehicle. That's where the Emden comes in, because you want the maize and blue twist to it, right? Well, the Superstore at 303 South State Street, you can see all of the winter Michigan gear, the winter coats, you see the fleeces, you see that nice maize thermal that I love. They have that on Emden.com right now. They're featuring that. Of course, if you're looking for Michigan basketball gear, the jerseys, the warm-ups, the tees, they have all of those as well. Any of your local Emden locations, of course, online at Emden.com. The Emden and the Victor's Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The Ticket. Joining us to talk a lot of Michigan basketball, the MGO Blog Roundtable, starting off first with MGO Blog's Brian Cook. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm good.
That's good.
I'm very good.
That's great. Ed, how are you?
I'm great, man. I watched one of Jim Harbaugh's favorite movies last night, Renaissance Man.
Are you fired great? Up are you great that. Because you watched?
I am, movies? Actually.
Really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was uplifting and maybe opened up a little bit of.
That's a really old film, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
Well, it's one of his favorite movies.
Isn't it like early 90s?
You're now saying that 90s. Late 80s is really old?
Yeah, I mean, well.
Really?
For us,
it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's got a little bit of that 90s cheese to it, but.
Gotcha. I remember that film. Yeah. Craig Ross, that's how are you
movie.
Today?
It's not a film.
I'm.
Tell Harbaugh that fine, to his man. Face.
I am fine, but like I just say it. It's a movie. That's not a film.
Okay. Craig, how are you today?
It's a film.
I'm doing fine. It's nice and warm here, but I am dodging ICBMs. But aside from that, it's all good.
Yeah, how did you do? So yeah. What happened? So yes, let's start there. We did not plan on talking about this, but since you brought it up, how did you react? Were you running around? Were you taking cover?
No, it's interesting. I was playing tennis with a guy who grew up in Ann Arbor, a successful attorney who's now a novelist, John Rowe. And we were playing tennis, and his wife called my wife because we didn't know. And so my wife wandered down to the tennis courts and said, "Hey, there's ICBM coming."
She wandered down. She didn't run down.
Just a slow meander, right?
She was wandering, and she didn't say
missile. She said ICBM.
She said ICBM.
Okay.
And so John said, "Ain't no ICBM coming to the Big Island. There isn't anything here. What are they going to get? A few pineapples and some coffee." And I said, "Well, what does it matter? Because, if I'm inside or outside, it don't matter."
Wait, so what do you mean, what does it matter? Why did you say, what does it matter?
Like, what does it matter?
We're just going to play tennis. I mean, it doesn't matter if the ICBM hits us while we're playing tennis or if I'm sitting inside. So
you might as well finish that set. Is that what
you must have been? Craig must have been winning.
But if it hits Oahu, you could actually maybe swim away from the nuclear.
That's hardcore, man.
Yeah, I'm not a good swimmer, It is what it is. So we finished our tennis game, but it was very eerie because Ali'i Drive near where the tennis courts are is it's not busy, but it's active even early in the morning. And there was nothing. There was no one on the streets. There was no traffic. There were no people. And the only thing that was going on is there was this old airplane. It was like an old biplane. It was noisy as heck. And it was circling over the courts. And the courts are right on the ocean and right near the ocean. And it was just a strange, weird sense. But fortunately, it was a clerical error, I guess. So but it was very strange. But no, I never really thought. I don't know. I don't know if I took it seriously or not. It was creepy. That's
you clearly did not.
Well, I mean, even if you did, it sounds like he would have finished the set.
Well,
right. Well, we were going to finish our match as best we could, you know.
He's right. If you're like ground zero at a nuke, you might as well
finish playing tennis.
Finish the set.
Again, I stand. Craig, what were you winning by? What was the score? You must have been winning.
You know, I don't even remember. It was close.
Craig doesn't have to be winning to want to play tennis. He's a very special individual.
What I take away from this is, you know, the footage of people running in the streets and taking cover. Craig wasn't in that group. He wasn't in that group at all.
No, it was people just seemed to go inside, except for John and me, and we just decided we were going to play tennis. That was the end of it. So, fortunately, I'm still alive, and all is good in the Big Island.
And
so, sorry, I got you off on this.
It's very interesting. Very interesting.
I love that you guys wanted to talk about ballistic missiles instead of Jim Harbaugh's favorite movie.
I think that's
Jim Harbaugh's favorite movie.
And I think
it's one of his favorite movies.
I'll accept one of his favorite movies,
but there's got to be like some
Falling Down. He loves. So there's another one.
Yeah, like there's got
to
be. Yeah,
that doesn't really apply to football.
No, but I also think that it's way more relevant to hear Craig's account of what happened in Hawaii, because we all read about it, and now we have someone to give us a firsthand story of.
Dude, we're a
not caring at all about
show,
it,
man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Basketball
show.
And certainly, there is a lot to talk about with regard to Michigan's basketball team. We went into the weekend, and I remember posing the question to the fans in the aftermath of Purdue. You know, a game in which Purdue gave Michigan its best shot for sure and won it in a nail biter, won it on a controversial call, at least in part. I felt like, for me, Michigan, they can win. I didn't predict them to win at Michigan State, but they can win this game. And I didn't think that heading into the season.
Well, I mean, once Michigan State goes to overtime with Rutgers, then you're like, all right, game on.
But didn't you think you were going to see a different side of Michigan State? Yeah, like they were going to wake up.
Everyone was going to think they were going to be more fired up because
that's
of the bad week that they had had.
Well, I mean.
And maybe they did. Maybe they did wake up.
Well, it's difficult because the way that game was called, where Michigan's in the bonus 5 minutes into each half, it's just there's no rhythm to the game, and it's just a very strange event that whenever Michigan goes to Breslin, they just get foul after foul after foul. And then you go to the Maryland game the next game, and it's just like, oh, right, this is the way it usually is, where there's not a lot of fouling, there's a lot of free movement, it's good to watch. And like, why does the Breslin game have to be that every year? I think I know why, but Michigan managed to overcome that. They managed to overcome some iffy two-point shooting.
Yeah, they were going out. You know, one of the calls they made on Mo, I was like, I think I even tweeted, they're treating the guy like he's Bill Laimbeer out here with these fouls.
Well, yeah, like Ward just falls over, and he's looking at Ward like, oh, he fell over, and he gets called. And I'm like, and that was 3 minutes into the game, and I was tweeting out like, I'm surprised it took TV Teddy put that long to put a trash foul on Mo. And for them to like manage to power through that, like Livers had some foul trouble and they had to put Robinson out there on Jaren Jackson, who's insane. And that actually went fairly well for Michigan because Michigan State was dedicated to like running their offense through posting him up on Duncan. And often Duncan would push that guy almost out to the 3-point line. And then 15 seconds later, they haven't been able to enter it to him and they're just trying to get a shot up. So he did a really good job. I think the team defense was really excellent. You know the team defense is really excellent when Jordan Poole comes in, gives a couple back cuts, and you're like, wow, that's the easiest shot they've had all day. And like everything else was contested.
Yeah, I was, I thought Charles Matthews' defense was, he didn't have a great day offensively, but I didn't care because I thought he did a whale of a job on Bridges. I thought Mo Wagner's, and I made this point about Purdue, you know, in some games, his best defense is going to be his offense. And they have guys, and it'll be interesting to see if Michigan plays Michigan State again, if Izzo is stubborn and goes out and says, our guys are just going to be better. Because after the game, he said, you know, we have guys that are better defenders than they showed. And, you know, our guards, it's on our guards, and they just have to be better. If you throw Cassius Winston, and ask him to just straight up guard Xavier Simpson or Muhammad Ali Abdul Rahman, he's not going to stay in front of him, period. That's not changing. If you ask Nick Ward or Xavier Tillman to go man-to-man against Mo Wagner, they're going to get beat. That's not changing. Those matchups don't get better for them.
I don't think it's quite as bad as you're saying.
Those matchups don't get better, man.
I thought
they can't guard him one-on-one.
I thought Tillman had a couple of really good plays. That might be their solution is like see if Tillman can ride. He was the only guy who really impressed me other than Jackson.
I think their solution is playing Jaren Jackson on him and playing
Miles Bridges
at the four.
So the problem with that, there's an Athletic article about this, is when that happens, their defense actually gets a lot worse because who are they bringing in? The only guards they have on their roster who don't start are Tum Tum, who's a complete zero offensively.
He is.
And Matt McQuaid,
and
may literally be a 12-year-old.
Is Michigan unguardable like Turgeon said? If they are, then you got to pick your poison.
Yeah.
And their poison, Michigan's biggest poison in this game, is Mo Wagner. You got to stop him.
Sure.
If you are Michigan State, you are focused on stopping Mo Wagner. You are not doing that with Nick Ward and Xavier Tillman.
I don't think you can put McQuaid and Tum Tum on the court for 30, 40 minutes and expect that an improvement. Because I mean people never really realize that they have no guard depth at all. So they have to play big, and they have to play Jackson at the four, and that's just the way they're going to have to get through it because they've got Schilling and they've got Tillman, who actually really impressed me in this game, and those are their only non-starters who I think can play at all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
It's gonna be, or maybe you play Jackson and Tillman until Tillman the guard the four.
I would give that a shot because that guy really impressed me. So,
well, I got some thoughts on the Michigan State game. I mean, one is that. I don't think the officiating was quite as bad as most people seem to think in that game.
I'm amazed.
Craig Ross, what is going on?
I mean, I thought, and I'm a big Ted Valentine fan. I think Valentine.
I'm amazed by that, too.
I mean, I think Valentine.
It's IMCB.
Valentine comes out of the old Big Ten pro wrestling days, and he was one of the few refs you could count on getting a reasonable game on the road back when the Big Ten was just a joke where road teams had very little chance. You had to win by 20 to win by one. And so I always respected Valentine that he wasn't intimidated by road crowds. And in this game against Michigan State, early on we did get some bad calls. They were all Rob Riley, two on Terry Weimer. Who is generally okay, and Riley we haven't gotten bad games out of, but I thought he was very weak early in the game. As the game went along, I thought the officiating went okay, but and I thought Valentine called a good game. And the overriding thing to me was how careless Michigan State is with the basketball. I mean, and that's a season-long thing. I mean, they had 18 turnovers in this game. I think we had 7. We beat them on the offensive board. So even though they're this big, strong team, they seem kind of disorganized. We ended up with 12 more shots. I thought Xavier outplayed Winston. So I thought there was just a lot of good stuff that happened for Michigan in this game. Even with the first 5 minutes, I mean, they're in the bonus, 4 minutes and 20 seconds into the game. They're already in the bonus. And yet Michigan hung in. And then Mo Wagner was the best player on the court. I mean, the ankle break of Nick Ward, I think in the second half, I mean, that's an iconic moment in Michigan basketball.
Right. And then I watch SportsCenter and they have the top 10 and they have, the alley-oop dunk
that was pretty good though.
But was it better than what Mo did?
I mean, no.
Mo didn't make the top 10. It's like, come on,
yeah,
man.
That's
joke.
Insane.
That dunk was pretty good.
Ward was way too close to Mo on that play anyways. He's got to know he can't do that. Of course, he's trying not to give up the shot.
Right.
But
pick your point. Again, he can't guard Mo Wagner one-on-one. I'm just saying.
I don't think Craig had quite completed his thought, though.
Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, there's some analogy with this and Purdue last year. I mean, Michigan played well against Purdue last year because they really couldn't keep Haas and Swanigan both on the court with against Wagner and Wilson. And so they end up just taking Haas off the court because he's you know, he can't check a team with two big guys who can move. And I think Michigan State gets stuck with some of the same problem. I mean, to some extent, they're too big, and at least against a team that can actually move their feet. And, you know, I think that caused some problems in the game. Now, you saw in the Maryland game, I think Maryland's a better coach team, incidentally.
And Michigan State?
A better coach team?
Michigan
with Mark Turgeon? Are you sure?
I'm sure.
You're wrong.
They had like five.
You're completely wrong, but that's okay.
They had like five assists in that game.
I know you don't like Turgeon, but I felt like Maryland came out and played smarter basketball than Michigan. Michigan did have, I don't know what Michigan was doing. They're sleepwalking in the first 18
minutes. Of course they were. Of course they were.
Well, I don't think 6 hours rest, man.
Hey, I just had 2 hours rest. I'm still on top of my game.
Yeah, that's what you think.
Are you, Craig?
Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm giving myself too much credit. I don't want to say that. But I don't know. When I was a kid, I played basketball 6-7 days a week, and I never felt like it had any impact on me at all. And so I don't buy this stuff. Oh, they played a game 2 days ago. I mean, practice is harder. The games are the easy parts.
Wow, and, and there's a lot. There's like evidence that's bad.
Well, to me,
he is the anti-analytic guy of the group. So,
I guess if you and your opponent were both playing 6 days a week, then then maybe you could make that comparison because I'm sure the levels of athleticism correlate, but. In this instance, you know, Michigan is playing on shorter rest than Maryland. You don't think that's a factor or that was a factor in the game?
No.
He didn't even take jump shots back then. It was,
come on.
Had to pull it out of the peach basket.
Come on. I can still shoot the jump shot.
I mean, the second half against Maryland was, obviously we enjoy it for a lot of reasons, but I think we really saw the crisp passing that we usually expect out of B-line offenses on some of those possessions in the second half. And if you combine that with this new stinginess that we have on defense this year, this is a pretty scary team.
I mean, to me, like, Michigan had one turnover in the first half against Maryland. You know, they blocked a couple shots, but not enough to, like, get, I think it was 0.7 points of possession. And Michigan had a lot of looks at the rim. So is that?
And they missed them. Yeah,
it's randomness, man. They missed a bunch of layups.
Yeah, I feel like you could play that first half over again, and Michigan would get 30 points.
And sure, you know, Craig. Here's the part. This is the credit that I'll give Turgeon and talk to B-line about it after the game. Mm-hmm. You know, they dictated pace in the first half of that contest. They walked the ball up the floor.
Yep.
They would pick Michigan up, full court, and it wasn't a real pressure defense. You could tell it wasn't a matter of forcing turnovers. They would have loved it. They just wanted to bleed the clock. They wanted to shorten the game. And that pace kind of lent itself to what looked to be some lethargy on Michigan's part, what may have been a little bit of lethargy. But understand, I expected Michigan to be in a bit of a funk coming off an emotionally and physically taxing game a couple of days prior. I guess I just disagree that, you know, you're going to be firing on all cylinders 2 days after a game like that.
Well, I'll never buy it, but I will say maybe emotionally coming off of both Purdue and Michigan State that maybe emotionally it's hard. We did stand around a lot, but I think your point is a good one, Sam, that Turgeon did take the air out of the ball, did slow the game down, and I thought that was smart. I thought that was tactically good, but I also thought we just stood around a lot, especially in the first half.
But the now, fact Mo, that they Mo played was, a game 2 days before was not relevant to that.
I don't think so. If you play a game, I mean, playing a game is the least taxing part of basketball. Because you're not on
Camp
the court
Sanderson,
any
man, that stuff
sitting,
is hard.
You're sitting around games. For a lot. They're sitting around for long periods of time. You know, a 3 hour, 2 hour practice is a lot harder than a game by a long shot. And so I don't buy it. But I I don't know what was going on with Michigan in the first half. I mean, it was hard to figure out how we could miss so many balls at the rim. But
so
whatever.
One thing I wanted to talk about is that Michigan stayed in that game in the first half largely because their defense was locked in. And
correct, I agree.
Maryland had 30 points, mm-hmm. and Michigan had 20, but 8 of those were like buzzer-beating, desperate, late clock shots.
Yep. So one was a brick that bounced off, and one was at the buzzer, a 22, 23-footer mm-hmm. that he just threw up that bounced off the bank.
Yeah, there was that, that bank shot was in the first half?
Yeah.
It was, okay.
So Michigan, like if they get a little bit better luck there, you're looking at like a 5-point deficit.
Yeah,
and,
I agree with
and
that.
You've got,
well, they could be up if you consider all the layups they missed, right? I mean, right. a lot and, of point-blank like, shots.
I don't know if any previous Michigan team, except maybe like the senior Morgan team, has the kind of defense that they're even in a game where they score 20 points and a half. So having that, that be such a consistent aspect of this team, even though they don't really have a great individual defensive player in their front court, is really encouraging.
We need to get to a break. It is 9:27 on a Thursday. Phone lines are open at 734-998-1050. Let's talk about that defensive improvement. It is stark. The numbers are, for me, unimaginable heading into the season that you would have Michigan with a be accounted for in the rankings like they are right now. Why? Why are the Wolverines where they are defensively? We'll get into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WT. So, guys, before we went to the break, we're talking about defense for Michigan. Top 20 nationally in defensive efficiency. Top 20 nationally in I remember. I'm exasperated by it because I remember sitting or standing and talking to Luke Yaklich at Media Day, and we were talking about defensive goals, and he said, you know, we are going to be a better 2-point defense team. We're going to be a better defensive rebounding team. Like, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, we can hold, but is it really going to happen?
That's about as spot on as you can get about this team defensively.
I mean, he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. Now, a lot of that is him, and I want you guys' take on this. A lot of that is obviously him, and he's highly analytic-driven. You'll love him in that regard, Ed. And the kids are really buying in. But I think the other part of this, and I gathered this from talking to the guys on the team, foundation for this was laid last year with Billy Donlin in a couple of respects. Number one, getting him to focus more on defense in practice. It became much more of an emphasis in practice last year, getting that buy-in from guys so they buy in more on the defensive end of the floor. So Yak is really benefiting from that. He takes the guys and numbers, and they are like, okay, really buying in there. And then the other piece is you got three guys that are rotation guys this year that I think are better defenders than the guys in the rotation last year. Xavier Simpson, Charles Matthews, John Teske.
And your Donlin point is easily seen in the number of threes opponents get up. So Michigan State in the first half of that game got up 3 3-pointers. And they were number one in fewest 3-pointers allowed to get up last year, and they're like 14th this year. You add in a revolution in Mo Wagner's rebounding, and the three guys on the perimeter and Teske, you mentioned, there's fewer blowbys, mm-hmm. and you don't see a lot of that. Like, okay, Mo has to rotate so clearly that there's going to be a dump off or a dunk. Like, people try to drive on Simpson and they just have to pass the ball out because he's in their face. So it's a nice change.
Absolutely. I think the first half of the Maryland game was an aberration in terms of defensive rebounding, but I look at defensive rebounding rate and I adjust for who you've played. So you get more credit for getting a lot of defensive rebounds against a good offensive rebounding team. I'm Michigan third in the nation. Wow. I mean, that's insanity. I mean, I know Beilein's always emphasized defensive rebounding, but third. more so than other. I mean, his defensive
more
thing
than offensive
is get rebounds, don't foul. Usually not forcing turnovers too, and that's the other thing. I got him 58th, and
he has been a staunch a staunch proponent of mitigating defensive
surviving on defense
inadequacies. Yeah. Or surviving defensive rebounding, you know, deficiencies with taking care of the basketball. You know, you take care of the basketball, sure. You shoot threes, you maximize possessions, and then that can mitigate rebounding damage. But this is a different spin on it. They are better. They are just flat out better on the glass.
I mean, they had 12 more shots than Michigan State, and that was with the last, six or seven possessions of that game being fouls where they go to the line because they're intentionally fouled. So that's why they won, because they had a huge advantage in shot volume. And the turnovers have always been there.
Taking care of basketball. Yeah.
And this year they're holding their own or even winning the battle. They won the battle against Michigan State. They won the battle against Purdue. And they won the battle. Well, it was a toss up against Iowa. And Iowa's not a very good team, but they are the best offensive rebounding team in the league.
Yeah, I just to get back to the defense, we'll get to the phones. I mean, watching their pick and roll defense and how that has really improved. I guess for me, watching defensive rotations on pick and roll is next level stuff. You know, Michigan has always been a hedge and recover team, but you know that next step, you know, that role guy, do you have that defender on the back end that is able to rotate over and give your recover guy, your big man, time to get back? I saw Michigan beaten like that frequently in the past and have seen them be much more connected in that regard this season. They are just flat out a better defensive team. I'm not going to call them best in the country, best in the league. They are a better Michigan, though. I don't think that's in any dispute.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a year ago we were just talking about the on-ball defense, dribble drive defense, and it was a real problem last year, and not so much this year. I mean, Xavier Simpson has been fantastic.
And it's a great point to make. I mean, if you can't just have great on the ball defense, you're certainly going to defend the pick and roll well, and they're doing all of it better.
Yeah, and the hard hedges greatly reduced. So we saw it against Michigan State like a couple times late in the shot clock where you're forcing that guy out and it's a surprise, but it's not every time. We're not getting kind of those cheap fouls on the perimeter with the hard hedge. You don't have to recover as far if you're kind of soft hedging.
And you have people on the back end though. I think I saw Duncan rotate over one. I was like, man, look at Duncan Robinson rotate over and give Mo a chance to get back and play some defense here. So, I mean, these guys, they're just flat out better. Hopefully they keep it up. But in Monday's game, that's what impressed me. Look, like you said, you score 20 points and a half, Michigan's losing.
Yeah.
But that was a game where they didn't play well, and they still found a way to win. Mm-hmm. Didn't play well offensively and still found a way to win. 734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones. Go to Mark in Lansing. Mark, what's up?
Hey, Sam. Good morning, and how do you guess? I'm not a stats guy because I think you're kind of optimistic. What does defensive efficiency measure?
Oh, you called it the right time. Oh man, you should
efficiency.
See his eyes,
his
eyes perked up and his ear. I mean,
well, I perked up because I wanted to jump in there before Brian. But efficiency in basketball is points per possession, so it's a stat that adjusts for tempo. Some teams are going to run up and down the court like North Carolina. Other teams are going to walk the ball up the court. So when you look at points per possession, that's what you mean by efficiency. And the good ones will adjust for strength of schedule because there's a wide range of talents in college basketball. So Ken Pom's stuff adjusts for strength of schedule. My stuff adjusts for strength of schedule. I have Michigan 24th right now. I think that's very, very good. I think they have actually room for improvement because they are allowing 36% from three-point range, which is 228th in the nation. And when you're a good two-point defense team, you should be a little bit better of a – you don't expect to be that bad.
They've improved like 100 spots or something like that in two-point defense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
– Yeah, they're
insane.
50th in two-point – that's really, really good.
Anything else, Mark?
Let me ask you a question.
Go for it.
They're better defensively because they got better individual defenders as you identified in
– Yes.
And Matthews, and then and Xavier, and then Teske. Sam, I got to disagree with you vehemently on their play. They play the pick and roll I get nervous to where they play the pick and roll, because often at least the mismatches, if you see Duncan Robinson out there checking a point guard, that's a bad pick and roll. If you got Xavier Simpson down there checking a center, how often have you seen Xavier checking a big guy down there or waiting for somebody else to come in? And let me finish.
I'm not saying anything.
I'll give this all to Yak. The other reason, what I can see optically, forget about the stats, that they do better.
Let me just tell you right now, you're doing something that they aren't even doing internally. I'm just telling
you. What do you mean?
I'm telling you that part of my take is based on conversations with players and with coaches, saying that the foundation for what we're seeing right now was laid last year.
Hey, man, it's being built upon now.
That's not in a media interview. That's not in a, you know, a talking point that, you know, that they're giving on the radio. That's in a conversation away from the mic. So
let me tell you what I see them doing differently than last year. They're getting more deflect. They're getting, and this is a commitment that Yak made when you asked him what he's going to do different. What does he look for when he looks for certain things as indications of good defense? Hands on the ball. They're getting a lot more hands on the ball than I've ever. They're deflecting a lot more passes than I've ever seen them do. And they are extending the defense and being way more physical on the perimeter and aggressive on the perimeter than I've ever seen them do. And I think that those are the two things I see that are different from years before. But I'm still uncomfortable with the way they play the pick and roll, how easy they are to switch, how difficult it then makes it for guys who are not proficient at being good defenders like we do have. I don't identify them by name, but you know who they are. Defending guys, they should never be checking. But yeah, I'm really pleased by the defensive improvement.
You know, Michigan is, and Beilein has said, look, they are a team that's going to switch on screens occasionally. You're going to wind up in suboptimal matchups at times. Can the opposition identify those matchups? Often they can't. If they do, then you know, more power to them. Maybe they're able to take advantage of it. But I think where I disagree is I don't look at them defensively, certain pick and roll defense, and expect them to be perfect. I'm talking about relative to Michigan. They're better than they were. It's not a complete guarantee. It's not a total guarantee of a bucket now, of an easy bucket at the rim. In Michigan's pick and roll defense, they've made progress in that aspect of their defensive performance. They made progress across the board, I think, is the point, including on pick and roll defense. Is it perfect? No. Do you have guys that are still defensive liabilities? Yes, you do. But even with those guys, they're a little bit better. So yeah, I'm pleased with how much progress they made.
You know, I think he's referring to a couple times Duncan got switched on a Cowan, and I was just like, how does that happen? And, you know, to their credit, that happened a couple times. They're like, let's not have that happen again. And they managed to get away from that. So there are some moments where I'm like, this team could be better. You know, the Herder, the Herder switch at the end. But that, I mean, Livers is a true freshman. So you've got a little bit of a different system. I think Donlin's influence does help. But, you know, this is still a work in progress. This is the first year, you know, where Don Brown shows up. And
right.
I'm not saying Yaklich is Don Brown. But
well,
like
he's having a – I tell you, Yak is having a hell of an effect, though. I mean, dude, like he called – I mean, that's calling your shot, two-point defense, right?
And rebounding.
And rebounding. And then you look at the numbers like, damn.
I think
called that crap out.
I think Michigan still has a little bit of upside to explore here, because you put Livers on the floor as a starter, then you got Duncan against, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th guys. And there's usually going to be a guy out there that he can do a pretty good job checking. There's going to be a McQuaid on the floor that he can be like, all right, I got that guy. and then Teske is going to be out there for more of his minutes as well. So there's more rim protection out there. So I think that's a good switch for Michigan going forward. It should help them out.
And I think this team is interesting, too, because now you can kind of go offense, defense, depending on the game situation. So if you want to play.
Which they did do late against Maryland.
Yeah, so if you want to go Duncan Robinson and Mo Wagner to kind of on the offense or switch it up other ways, you can do that. And I think that's an interesting twist that we, you know, before it was just like, yeah, let's outscore them.
Craig, Your thoughts on the defense before we get to the break?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is there was a guy I used to call WTKA. I don't know what happened to him. His name was Jameel. And he used to talk about pick and roll, pick and pop all the time and complaining that Michigan didn't, you know, really use that as a part of its offense, at least at the time when he was calling. And he was right. I mean, the point is that it's really hard for anybody to defend the pick and roll and the pick and pop. It's basic stuff, but it's hard to defend, and it's why it's timeless in basketball. And so inevitably you're going to get stuck sometimes with bad matches. And twice, at least in the Michigan State game, Mark Dodd is right that, Z ended up on Jackson, which you would think would be about as bad a match as possible. But for some reason, Michigan State decided not to throw the ball into Jackson when he's being guarded by a guy a foot shorter than he is. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why I didn't find this Michigan State team to be particularly well coached. And, I mean, things like that happened a lot in the game. Plus, on the offensive side, there was at least two or three occasions when you had both Cassius Winston and Nick Ward guarding Simpson while Mo Wagner standing alone at the three-point line where they completely blew the pick-and-roll coverage. So it's hard. You know, I agree with Sam that our pick-and-roll defense has gotten a lot better, but I also agree with Mark that sometimes it's going to fall apart, but that's going to be for just about every team. And I thought, incidentally, that was something Maryland did pretty well often in the Maryland game. So
all right.
I thought they
We have one more break to get to. When we come back on the other side, we'll go back to the phones. George and Ipsy, you're up first. We'll get some closing remarks as well. Look ahead to the Nebraska game. Stay tuned for that here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The ticket. Let's go back to the phones. Go out to Ipsy and talk to George. George, you're on with the Roundtable crew. What's up?
Yeah, good morning, fellas. I would like to have somebody explain to me why Michigan pulled their defense back the other night in that Maryland game. The last couple of minutes of that game, and just let Maryland roll the ball up the floor and save time by not starting that clock. I'm standing here yelling at the TV, run the clock, run the clock, and I don't see anybody for Michigan in the picture. I mean, if they would have been just putting soft pressure on that ball as Maryland was bringing it up the floor, I don't think that last three-pointer for Maryland would have ever happened because there would have been no time left on the clock for it to happen. It just seemed like Michigan laid back and let Maryland save time by rolling the ball up the floor. Can you explain why they do that to me? Thank you.
Well, clearly they knew that they needed those 3 seconds at the end of the game. That's well, I think what it is that you're going up against a guy in Cowan who's really, really quick, and you're trading off that time for the ability to be fully defensively set instead of having to press. And if you try to press that guy in the backcourt, maybe he gets to one side of Simpson, and then your defense is starting this possession kind of off balance. And he's a guy who can go to the rack immediately and get a bucket. Don't know if I agree with – I might have pushed up a little bit more, but that's probably the thinking.
That is the thinking.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Craig. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that I agree that it wasn't as crazy as it might seem because Collins is really quick. I mean, he might be the quickest guy in the Big Ten, and I was impressed with him. The thing that I guess I would ask about or question or wonder about is why you've got Z on the floor at the end of the game. That one is hard to figure out for me because he's just can't shoot free throws, and so you have him in that situation. Well, I don't know.
Muhammad has to go get the ball, period. He has to go get the ball in that situation. Now, as they move on, let's say they're in the game tonight and there's a similar scenario. You know, Beeline talked as if he spoke as if he'd still put Xavier on the floor. I think it's going to be more situational than that. If you're in a game and Xavier Simpson has gone 4 for 6 from the free throw line, then there's a good chance he'll be on the floor at the end of the game. If he's gone 1 for 6, you can't have him on the floor. You got to take him out at that point.
Well, and part of that is just awareness. So he went to the line because Maryland scored and Michigan was so intent on getting the ball in that they had Muhammad take the ball out of the basket and throw it to Simpson. And you can't do that. Like, maybe Simpson should be inbounding at the end of these games.
Mm-hmm. I like that, Brian.
So, you know, I think.
Well, I mean, Matthews is struggling as well, right? So you got two of your top guys that you want on the court in, you know, late game situations that are really struggling. I mean, you're going to see a lot more hack of those guys heading down to the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird thing for a
– Yeah, Xavier Simpson was like a 70% free throw shooter last year.
Yeah,
right?
On like 30 attempts, so like not a whole lot of sample size.
Hypnosis. He needs to be hypnotized.
Yeah, but don't get rid of all the defensive goodness, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
you gotta...
I mean, I actually, when I was going through a struggle in the City League, I went and got hypnotized, and it cured my free throw problems right away. So that's my suggestion. I'm serious. That's stupid, I know.
Did the rest of your game go downhill?
Well,
did you defend still?
The rest of the game. No, I couldn't do anything, but I could shoot free throws. But in any event, I got so frustrated when I got the yips, I went over, got hypnotized, and solved my problem. So that's my suggestion for Michigan basketball. Find a hypnotist for Z because he should be a better than 50% free throw.
Yeah. Find a hypnotist and scrap all of the studying they're doing on rest and how it contributes to performance in games.
We're going to be talking a lot about rest, right, because the Big Ten tournament's a week earlier. So does that help? Does that hurt? Craig obviously think it doesn't matter, but I think it's going to be great for the entire league.
Michigan tracks it. I mean, they track it, you know, to every minute, every practice minute, sure. Every training minute.
Well, but I think
they know
they have the sensors on in the game, right? Because that's that funky looking thing, like in the hunchback part of
it. They have that too. You're right, exactly right. So clearly, they're more believer. They believe it more deeply than Craig does. Clearly.
Well, in Craig's defense, they did like back Walton off a bunch last year because he was going too hard in practice.
Yep.
So maybe Craig's practice right.
Practice is where you get tired, not in games. So,
also, nobody should ever play seven guys. Six guys is maximum number of good.
I think if you're Craig, I think if you're Hibbets, you're right. Practice is much tougher than the games. I think for the rest of the guys, I don't think that's true.
All right. Well, we'll just disagree on this one.
All right.
That's okay,
Craig. Make sure you find the shelter there in Hawaii so you know exactly where to go next time. If it happens, man, you're not just staying on the court playing a team.
It happens again. That's legit.
Right.
Like, there's no way that the next one is a false alarm, Craig. Right. I just want you to know that.
Okay. Right. Spot on analysis there, Mr. Cook. That'll do it for us this week, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, another great MGO Blog Roundtable.